Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. We just want to say a quick happy 4th of July to anyone who is celebrating. And because we already extended the sale into the weekend, we thought one more day, one more day. It's a special day. We'll give a discount. So we are continuing the 60% off of the Gen Health platform. We've got such an incredible response and people joining, and it's really exciting to continue to build this community and see what's possible for people. I've gotten just such great responses. People who have only been through plans for a few days, already starting to feel something different within their body. And there's 11 different plans that you can explore, all for one price. So if you get in now, today is the last absolute day we are going to allow this discount, and we have it at $119. So that's 60% off of what you would normally pay, which is about $300 if you pay that monthly rate. So $119. For 11 different programs. Each program not only has one phase, but it has three phases per plan. And we're going to continue to update this, create new programs, new plans, and just continue to create a platform that people really need. So the more that we hear from you of what you need and what you're feeling in your body, the more we're going to make it the best we can for you. So if you haven't yet, go sign up. We're going to drop the link below, but it's gen.health/free trial to get right into your free trial and get started at this yearly discount. So talking to the hip labrum, we have gotten a lot of questions about this, so that's why we're doing an episode on it. However, keep in mind, we've also done episodes on FAI, which is like your hip impingement, way back, episode 13, and we've also done an episode on like hip bursitis. So if any of these areas, if you have trouble with the hip, go back to all of these podcasts, because they're going to give you just different identifying markers of the symptoms you might feel and what you can do, which might have some crossover.
Yeah, and generally, if you're listening to something and you start resonating like, ooh, these sound like a lot of the key things I deal with, that's a good rabbit hole to start going down, or start, you know, maybe find somebody who can talk to you a little bit more about those. But the hip labrum, I think it's one of the things that gets talked about so much, but very few people know what it actually does or what it actually is. And I mean, we generally talk about hip labrums when it comes to the hips and the shoulders. I mean, because they're two common things that get injured a lot, and so that's why they come up. But the labrum itself is actually this little extra bit of cartilage around, kind of, so our hip is a ball and socket joint. Mm-hmm. And the socket on our pelvis is called the acetabulum, and we have this cartilage that goes around the rim of that acetabulum, and that's our labrum. And it essentially helps make a more congruent surface. It almost like helps suction cup that ball onto the socket of the hip.
Yeah, and it really just helps with that overall joint stability. So think about it kind of helping with that joint lubrication, making sure that we're kind of increasing the contact area within that whole joint itself, and really just acting as a shock absorber.
And another thing about the labrum is it's very highly innervated, and so it helps a lot. I mean, it senses pain, so that's why when we have labral injuries, we will have a lot of pain, but it also deals a lot with proprioception, which is this like sense of where we're at in our hips, obviously very important to balance. So if we have issues with our labrum, or if we have any labral degeneration, it's going to affect our body's ability to like feel steady or have balance. So that's something that a lot of people will notice.
Yeah. And those free nerve endings going to elicit the pain. So definitely, that's why it's so sensitive for a lot of people to experience this pain anytime we get this kind of pinching or too much pressure on one part of the labrum. And we can get tearing in different parts of the labrum as well, which is what we're going to talk about.
And so how does this happen? I think it's kind of funny because when you look at all of the ways that, you know, the common positions that you tear the labrum in, it's basically if you take your leg and put it in any extreme motion, because as soon as we start rotating, we're putting a little bit of tension on that labrum, or we're putting it at risk of being kind of pinched between our femur, the neck of our femur, and the acetabulum, or the rim of that acetabulum. So it's always like, oh, well, if you're way extended in your hip and at a lot of external rotation, you might be at risk of tearing your labrum. And then there's a few other positions, but those are actually what we call close-packed positions of the joint, where the joint has a lot of tension in it. So any position you get into that you feel like that hip is just way wound up, you're probably putting a lot of pressure on the labrum.
And hip extension, external rotation, we can think about that as a dancer or a gymnast, which is, I did have a lot of hip issues. And it wasn't until I started to actually improve my hip mobility that I started to see a significant difference. And this is after gymnastics, because I think what we think about a lot too, and this is everyday person, not someone who's just in dance or gymnastics, but we think about, you know, stretching the hip flexors and stretching the hamstrings, but we don't think about this rotation a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's when you get into this extreme rotation, so that the leg behind you and then the foot kind of, or the knee facing out. So that's extension, external rotation. And that's like a split, jump that you might do, you know, or kicking your leg back behind you. So if you're always putting your leg into that position, it's just putting a lot of stress and strain on that joint. And if we don't have good hip rotation in general, it's going to put even more pressure in one area of that labrum and kind of cause that tissue damage in that area.
A split jump, which I demonstrated very nicely in our last podcast. So hopefully
we can get that split jump in this YouTube video.
Hopefully our editor throws that in this YouTube video just for your comic relief. But I think a lot of athletics or even yoga, you think about the positions we go into in yoga, you're getting into a lot of that external rotation in the extremes of flexion or extension.
Yeah.
Same with different sports like basketball or football. We do a lot of external rotation, but we might not be focusing as much on the internal rotation or balancing that or controlling within that extreme range. So anything that puts our hip as at an extreme range and then puts a lot of force on it is going to put a lot of tension and force through that labral area.
Yeah. And so, and then we're at an increased risk if we have a history of like hip dysplasia, which we are going to do a podcast on coming up soon.
We've been getting asked about that one.
Yeah.
Or different hip traumas.
Yeah.
If you've had impingement, kind of like we mentioned, FAI can be associated with having labral issues as well.
Yeah. And hypermobility. So if you know that you're a naturally hypermobile person, your joints naturally want to go to their end range and kind of hang out there. And so being able to have that control is super crucial, especially if you know that you have a case of hypermobility. And we've done podcasts on hypermobility before, but quick test, just like put your thumb back, like extend it back. And does it go into like the hitchhiker's thumb that's like flat back, right? Or can you extend your elbow and it goes and it like hyperextends a lot?
Elbows, or can you easily just put your palms down on the ground?
Yeah.
Or have you always noticed you have really bendy fingers?
If you put your hands in a bowl?
Fingers back or thumb down. So yeah, hypermobility is huge. And then when we start talking into symptoms, okay, so how do I know if this is the thing that I'm dealing with? Because a lot of people will feel that pain in the front. A lot of people look at that C sign. We call it a C sign, where if you make a C with your hand and put your pointer finger and middle finger on the front of your hip. So you kind of turn your hand down. That's called the C sign, because a lot of people will go, "Ooh, I just have pain right in here." And they'll kind of point to the front of their
deep.
Front of their hip, and it's deep. And that actually means, you know, it generally means it has to do with deep joint type structures. So then we look at FAI, we look at something that might be happening with the labrum, we look at some of the muscles that kind of attach deep in that area. And so people will have the C sign and they'll say, "Ooh, it's a real deep, dull ache." Mm-hmm. I sometimes have this pain at night. It happens a lot when I rotate or I pivot on my feet, because that's, again, we're going into that internal, external rotation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you might get, you're probably going to hear a little bit of like clicking and popping that's happening. Maybe you feel like it gets locked up sometimes. That could be an indication of some labral stuff happening there as well.
And of course, we mentioned earlier, it's going to be painful. So this is something that likely you're going to have consistent pain with when you do activities. If you return to the same activities, you're going to have that pain. Anything that has impact, anything that is causing you to do a lot of that twisting or rotation or extreme extension range of motion, because we're needing to use that labrum. The labrum is going to be involved in every single hip motion. So if we're irritating it, if we're kind of moving the hip and prodding at that thing, it's probably going to be painful.
Yeah. So especially look out for it when you're doing activity, but also it could be associated with just like prolonged sitting, you know, walking for long periods of time. And so that's why it's also like there's so many factors to take into place here. And that's why going into the treatment and kind of seeing, okay, is this feeling better with conservative treatment? Is it feeling better when I start to actually do some of the things that we're going to talk about?
Yeah. And when we talk about treatment, so labral structures aren't ones that necessarily heal really well,
right?
Because they don't have a great blood supply. We talked about how they're fairly highly innervated, but they don't have amazing blood supply, so they don't heal super well on their own. And so then the question is, like, there are surgical options, of course.
Yeah.
And then there's the conservative options, and there's really evident, like, decent evidence for either route, depending on, again, how you kind of get triaged by a doctor or an ortho, because there are some instances in which conservative approaches have a lot of merit, mm-hmm. and can be really successful, especially if you're not getting really severe locking,
yeah.
of the joint, or if your pain isn't to the point where it's unbearable just from walking. You know, if you're noticing it kind of in that dull ache, or, you know, some nighttime pain, or when I make certain movements, I feel this, but then we start to get out ahead of it, you yeah. might be able to get to the point where you train around it and don't have to do any sort of surgical intervention.
Yeah. And so when we're first getting back into, like, okay, then what can we do for this? We really want to start to manage pain control. So we don't want to be pushing into any areas like the hip extension and rotation that is going to be causing pain. You know, if we're wanting to kind of back off to decrease those pain sensors just in the brain in general, then we need to kind of control the pain levels that we're having at the moment. And so that might mean limiting those extreme ranges of motion, backing off of that extreme activity. We could still do activity. We're still going to do movement. And then really starting to understand this trunk control and stabilization, which is something that we talked about in episode 50 a lot as well. We mm-hmm. get asked about snapping hip syndrome and why do my hips click and pop? And this was one of the reasons that your hips can click and pop. And going back into that episode, we talk a lot about the core control and what that really means. And we talk like so much about this in our Gen Health and Optimal Body communities as well.
Yeah. And trunk control, what's that look like? I mean, whenever we talk trunk control, we talk about our relationship of what our ribs are doing compared to our pelvis. You know, you'll talk about anterior pelvic tilt or posterior pelvic tilt, or are my ribs kind of flaring, flared out, you know, in the front? And how do I make sure I'm always aware of what those are doing in relation to each other? Because if the pelvis is always in this anterior tilt, that affects what the hips are doing, and that affects the hip labrum, mm-hmm. Which is why we always go back to core control if we're ever talking about the hips or the shoulders, because they're so intimately involved in our core. So the first thing is getting on your back and doing something like supine marches. And can I control that supine march with still having good control of my hips, my pelvis, and my rib cage, so those aren't just continuing to move as I move those legs? If you lay on your back and you try to just do a, you know, nice and easy supine march, and you notice your hips are all over the place, that's a good sign of, hey, when I'm walking, I'm probably not controlling my pelvis that well.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people too, it's like we've been taught poor cueing when it comes to core control. And a lot of times it's like, pull your belly button back to your spine. But if I suck my belly button in, all I'm doing is pulling the pressure up and down, so into my pelvic floor as well, but I'm flaring my rib cage a lot. So that's actually not a good cue. And something like, even if you're just sitting and listening right now, even if you're sitting in your car, something you could do, place at least one hand, if not two hands, on the sides of your rib cage and try to take a
both
deep...
Both hands, drive with your knees.
One hand if you're driving. And try to take a deep inhale from the sides of the rib cage, and then a really long exhale, keeping the shoulders upright, but allowing that rib cage to move to the side and then contract and lower as much as possible. And you'll notice when you do this, it kind of forces you into a better quote unquote posture, because all of a sudden you can't really breathe into the sides of the rib cage a lot if your rib cage is forward and flared, and you can't do it if you're like rounding and down. You kind of have to be in that centered position. So automatically just pumping that diaphragm more gets your body in a more aligned position. And then that's a first place to start, just starting to use that diaphragm. And then we go into, like Dom said, with those marches and stuff. Now, how do we control that rib cage diaphragm with the pelvic floor and what we're doing when we move our legs? Like, so this goes deep, and that's why it's not just do some planks or do some sit-ups. That is not trunk stabilization, that's not trunk control. Trunk control is truly understanding this relationship from the diaphragm to the pelvic floor and how it works when we move our arms or our legs.
Yeah, and once we start to really get a sense of that core control, and especially core control as we move the legs, then we have to try and figure out how we can control our hip through all of this range of motion. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to go to extremes right away, but starting out with like minimal hip circles.
Yeah.
And it can even look like you're just standing and you start by kind of finding that core stability, and then you bring your leg a little bit forward and kind of rotate it all the way out to the side, come kind of back, maybe go into a little bit of extension or just keep it in neutral, yeah, and then back to center.
Or you can do it on your back too.
Yeah, you can do it on your back. You can just let your legs kind of slowly go out to the side into some of that external rotation, which may have been aggravating before, but again, maybe not to the extreme range, and then back to the center. You don't even have to bring your feet off of the ground to start. So things like that, that are going to start getting your hip moving in different directions with that core control, so that we can start programming. Okay, when I move this hip, I keep my core somewhat more activated and stable, so that once you get back to doing things like walking or running and doing activities, you're going to have a little bit more of that programmed in.
Mm-hmm. And then we want to make sure that we're getting into strengthening as well. And this is where it's like, okay, let's get into a range that doesn't feel aggravating for my hip. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times, you know, the basics are going to be side clamps, but sometimes that is kind of putting your hip in extension and then external rotation where it might not feel good for you. So maybe we have to modify how we do a side clamp, or maybe we're going to the wall, laying on your side and then going really close to the wall, so you don't have a lot of extension, but your legs straight, you get into that core control, that rib cage pelvis alignment, kick your heel back and point your toe to the ground. Now we're going into a little bit internal rotation, but we still get a little extension and a little muscle building in the glute area. Can we do bridges? Maybe we're doing soft bridges. Maybe we're doing our heels on an elevated surface and just lifting into a modified bridge where you don't have to go into full extension. So we start to play around with how can I get into isometric control and contractions before I get into movements like squats, like lunges, and really firing up under load. But how can I do it where I just start to feel the muscle and I don't have any pain or aggravation?
And I would say probably after or kind of along with, as you're doing the strengthening, you're going to be wanting to progress your range back to what you would call, quote, normal range of motion. Mm-hmm. Right? So as we start doing strengthening in a comfortable kind of tolerable pain level, then of course, you know, generally that pain level will start receding or staying about the same, and then we can start moving into a little bit more range of motion so that we might get to what we would call more normal range of motion as we had before, but we're not noticing that we're having as much of that pain or catching from the labral issues.
Mm-hmm. And then we go into some sensory work, because remember what Dom said is that the labrum kind of senses our proprioception, our place in space, right? So now if we're thinking of sensory, we're thinking of balance type stuff. So single leg balance work. Maybe we're throwing a ball on a single leg, or we're doing something that kind of is distracting you and it's making that joint and those muscles around that single leg from the hip all the way down kind of work. And the core control kind of works into that as well. So getting into some single leg balance work, maybe getting into some single leg deadlift type work and reaching in different directions. Like, this is all part of starting to program in different directions within your hip, strengthening and proprioception.
Yeah. And I mean, along with that, just doing basic things like lunges and squats.
Yeah.
Again, because then you're doing it on more of a controlled pace, because then after that, the next step is, how do I start returning back to the activities sport or the sport that I want to be doing? So then what kind of plyometrics are you going to be adding in? Which I like starting out with even just a little drop squat where you're kind of up on your toes and then you drop into a squat, or going on to a little step and then dropping into a squat, because that's going to reintroduce that impact that may have been real uncomfortable on the hip. And then doing other things like agility, if that activity you want to get back to has you changing directions, like, mm-hmm, how can we work on side shuffling or doing, you know, different ladder drills, stuff like that.
Yeah. And, you know, they've really found that when patients work in this controlled manner, so this is usually guided from a physical therapist. Yeah, obviously, we're talking through everything. However, you might be like, how often and when do I do it? And it's really hard to guide yourself. Even if Dom and I were injured, we'd go see a physical therapist. You know, it's easier to have that professional guidance along healing to make sure that you're really getting the impact that you want, because there is good correlation that patients can decrease pain. They can get back to function and they can feel so much better and kind of have this improved muscle imbalance. You don't feel so imbalanced anymore. You don't feel so much in pain when you really are guiding yourself back along this journey properly. So I do recommend guidance.
Thanks for joining in for another podcast. If you have any episodes or any topics that you would want us to do for one of these PT Pearls, please reach out, DM us, email us at jen@docgenfit.com. If you love this episode, share it out with somebody. Maybe leave us a rating and review and subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. If you further want to support us, you can always do that by going and purchasing one of our Optimal Body To Go kits. We have code OPTIMAL10 that you can get 10% off just specially for you, our podcasting audience. And of course, we will see you next time on the next episode of the Optimal Body Podcast.